How have you been following the Olympics at all?
A little bit. I've seen the stuff that everyone's talking about.
Well, do I have the story for you? I mean, yeah, you've been following like the chocolate muffin guy
and like the Turkish guy who shoots really good.
Yeah. And the speedwalkers with the hips.
Yes. So what story you got for me?
This is from the Associated Press in the oddities section.
And you've got an actual article pulled up, not a screenshot from Twitter.
Yeah, wow. This is an article written August 2nd, 2024 by Raphael Lester. And it is called Pindemonium Hits Paris Inside the Pin Trading Market at the Olympics.
Ooh.
It's got a picture of a, you know, TGI Fridays style person with...
Wow, that's a lot of
million
pins.
I thought I would bring this up.
Is 2025 going to be like pin year? Are we going to go all in on enamel?
Man. I mean, I do have a bag with pins in it. I have a bag with some of the Final Fantasy 14 pins I got. I got you some of those too.
From my birthday.
Those, yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. I got those off Etsy. I got you a Red Mage one.
And a paladin one.
Yeah,
yep.
Yeah, that was cool. On the other side of the Atlantic from Wall Street, a market more wholesome than cutthroat has sprung up at the Paris Olympics. The commodity at the center of it all? Pins.
This is a great classic reporter story. So yeah, a human being wrote this.
I love this. Yeah, it's definitely not written by AI. It's really not written by AI, and that's going to be important as we get into today's episode. Check out that article if you want. I just thought, man... The older I get, the less I care about what actually happens at the Olympics, and the more I care about all of the adjacent,
yeah, exactly,
ephemera around the Olympics.
I don't even know where I'd watch it. I guess like it's probably
Paramount.
Okay, yeah, sure, yeah. They got that license.
What should we watch on Peacock? For our internet. For those of you who are on TikTok, you know exactly what I'm referencing, what horrible ad I'm referencing.
I don't, but that's hilarious.
Oh my God. It's so bad. And then Tyler
The answer is Poker Face. You should watch Poker Face on Peacock.
Okay. Well, then Tyler Oakley did a really good rendition of it where he just goes, "What should we watch on Peacock?" Hold on. Let me check the levels there. Ooh, well, not too bad. Oh, God. Oh, it's pandemonium here in the studio today. We better get started with the episode before things get more out of hand.
We start our relaxing journey by sleuthing out a murder and trying to reason with obstinate AI in quiet onset.
But a storm of buzz, and we're going to tell you about how we saved the world.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of ASMR August Storm Buds. I am your hyper-focused coffee intern of light, Jerome Barbatsis, and I am joined by my disgraced B-movie star of light, Alexander Ambrock.
I don't really know what I'm doing. Should I have, like, tennis ball halves on my eyes?
You definitely should have something to tap, at least, for ASMR August. We're playing a bunch of relaxing games.
What is this from?
It's probably from a cap from a protein shake that I drank a while ago.
Got it.
We today are playing one of the most relaxing games.
Relaxing. That's the emotion that this game induced.
Oh my God.
Do you want to explain what this
today
is?
Today we're playing quiet on.
This has 13 Steam reviews. No one knows what this is.
This game, this is a game released by Northern Dev Studio, published by Low Country Games. Quiet Onset, the unfortunately named impossible to Google search because of the documentary about Nickelodeon TV, is a video game released in March 7th of this year, 2024. And I'll read the Steam summary for you. Quiet on set! Action! Amidst a grand mansion, an elite movie production turns sinister with a sudden murder. Investigate, interview suspects, gather clues, and solve the murder. But beware, push too hard, and you could be the next victim.
That never happened to me.
None of that is so inaccurate. What this game really is a procedural, not even procedurally generated kind
no,
of.
No,
it's
actually hand generated. It just offloads all the dialogue to AI chatbots.
So there, the premise of this game is that you are a random person who is apparently not involved with any authorities, who is just on the set of a movie that has, instead of any given movie, that has all of these movies, a murder has happened.
Yes.
And you...
All at the same mansion.
In first person are exploring this same mansion for every different case and trying to look around to pick up clues that are randomly placed around that will give you hints as to what to ask these certain cast of characters around in the set. I said around like 6 times. I'm going to put a moratorium on that word. Next, what you do is you look in your journal, you review the case materials, you review the people you're supposed to talk to and supposed to explore the mansion and try and have conversations with people. The journal gives you some helpful questions to get you started, but ultimately you're having conversation with a bunch of ChatGPTs who have certain personality traits instilled into them, and they have certain details that they hyper-focus on and cannot get off of a lot of the time, and you're just trying to solve the very really real relevant case of what's going on with the murder, and the AI will be like, anyway, this person, I gave this person this coffee order in this room, and this one in this, and not in this room, but this person wasn't in, and you're like, oh my god, I just asked you about one person, and they're like, let me know if you want some coffee. Like, no, what? I don't even go here.
Which actually, so like, okay, so here is kind of like my 30,000 foot view on this game. I mean, I guess like, to set expectations.
Oh, yeah.
This game is made in Unity. Mm-hmm. It appears to be using a lot of assets that I think are from the asset store. It is a low budget operation.
It is a very low budget operation. It is a $12 game on Steam. It's not a AAA game, and it is it has Game Jam vibes. It probably started out as a certain Game Jam, but there's a little bit more to it. For me, it feels a lot like The Looker.
Yeah.
The parody game of The Witness.
The Looker was amazing.
The Looker was freaking incredible, but like it was doing that. It had this level. They had that level mm-hmm. of polish on, or like ironically, because clearly what it's basically that level of game, but it's trying to be very unironic about it.
Yes. To be clear, like I have nothing against games that use Unity assets. Like
oh,
I think
no.
that you
Go
can do
it.
Stuff with like, especially with a small team, there's nothing wrong with like repurposing stuff that you find in order to make like a small kind of like experimental thing. I think in weird ways, this game actually works better than I expect it to, right up until the point where it just doesn't work at all. Which I think reveals a lot about, I have thoughts about what this means for AI in gaming. But
this game is, it's also similar to Facade in that like you have an objective and you're just trying to talk with AI people to get that objective, but it is very dissimilar in the Facade in that nothing ever progresses. Like with Facade, like you get an ending to a case, and in this game you have what, like 10 minutes to fully explore this and try to have reasonable conversations with like 5 different people who are meandering and unhelpful all the time.
Well, and who, like, whenever you try and like ask them any off-topic question, like interject their personality traits into all of their answers in a way that is super clear how the AI was steered. Just be like, no, you always talk about how you like to use light like it's paint.
I can't believe you're asking me about the murder victim when the integrity of my story is at stake. And you're like, what? It's also frustrating when you try to ask them about the murder, though, because they also think that the murder, the first case is something about integrity in writing, and the writer is anytime you try to point out the similarities of what's happening on the set, what happened on the set and the clues that you're given to the script that he's describing, he's like, no, this is just a fictional play. That's not real life. And like, How do I say this? It's so hard to talk about, but I have this thought that like these characters contradict themselves, but not in a way that is compelling or human to contradict themselves.
Yeah,
you'll talk to the PA on set, and they'll be like, "You'll have to run through any changes to this script. Like this clue, this item is not in the script. You have to run through any changes with the director Jay, who is totally available to work on." And it's like the director's dead. You idiots.
It's
like, oh, I guess I forgot that the director was the one who's dead. My bad. And it's like, what?
Well, because that's what ChatGPT does, right? Like, I mean, and this is the thing, right? I don't actually know if this is running on ChatGPT. It might be running on like a cheaper model or something, but it's a very similar experience. And the thing that really is like, the thing that like is a little bit impressive about it is that they have managed to kind of keep the different bots on the rails to a degree. Like they do have concrete clues that they are aware of that they will tell you about if you ask them in the exact right manner.
There are certain checkpoints that you can unlock. I got one at any given case because it's I don't know. It feels very narrow what you have to ask these NPCs, and they don't quite give you enough. Like, nobody's cooperative enough at all to the point where...
They can't extrapolate.
They can't extrapolate anything upon what you're saying. Even if you, like, go and find all the clues in an area and specifically ask them about the clues, you may... You're likely... They're likely to be like, oh, that's weird. And then that's about it. And maybe they'll say, you should try and figure out why that is. Could you help with some information?
Any information?
Like, this is what we're supposed to talk about. So it is very disconnected from reality in a lot of ways that makes it very interesting. So go for it.
Because thinking also about sort of like generative AI in video games and that being a big thing that like lots of actually people with money are putting lots of work behind, right? Like Ubisoft has a whole big like AI thing they're working on, right? They've shown off some generative dialogue type stuff and everything. This obviously does not have an Ubisoft budget. This is a budget of about $200 if I had anything to guess.
Yeah.
But I think fundamentally like the problems here are problems that like seem like they're going to scale up, which is that even if you can get the AI to hold on to facts in its head and to deliver consistent responses and to know things about the world or whatever, you can't make up for the fact that it's not interesting to read as a story. There's
yes.
like novelty factor in seeing like just the deranged responses it produces, but it can't make something that is enjoyable to interact with as a narrative. It just can't.
And as a puzzle, it's very easy to brute force.
Yes, that too.
So there's not really a whole any satisfying layer or any sort of dramatic reveals because there is no narrative pacing to what's going on. There is just a scene that has happened, and it feels like I'm loath to make a Harry Potter reference, but it really does feel like we're talking to the portraits in the wall. We're just like stuck in a moment in time, and can't have no interest in actually existing in the space and moving forward with the story. So that stinks.
And just like, I see why you would go for like a mystery setting, because the idea of it, oh, you interrogate characters to get information and we like have the chatbots do that bit. Sure, that tracks. I think it's also a really bad idea to make it a mystery, because mystery fiction, books, movies, games, etc., a lot of it is really driven by compelling characters with sharply written dialogue who you enjoy talking to. And this cannot have that.
It just can't. So that's unfortunate. I don't think the correct way to play quiet on set is to solve the murder mystery.
No, it's really not.
I think the correct way to play quiet on set is to stream it and then start insulting the various idiots that you're running into.
Well, that's the other thing also. This is such a streamer game, right? I'm going to throw this on. And
yeah, total streamer clip farm game. Perhaps we'll do it. I don't know. but it's not too expensive. If you're looking for a game to stream and get some funny clips out of, you can do that. You can start saying swear words and other things at these NPCs and get them to mildly react a little bit. They're not, again, it's unlike Facade. God, do you know Facade?
I don't. What's Facade?
God, Facade, you are you're just a house guest, and there are these two people who are AI generated, but they're much more compelling than anything in this game. There's two people who are in this fraught relationship, and they have a lot of talking points that you can get into. It's like, if you look for clips on TikTok or YouTube of Facade, you might recognize this game. It's very old.
Okay.
But it is really funny, and there's a whole there's also just various endings that are thought out, and the game will sort of direct you itself. And that's another thing this game doesn't have. It doesn't have any direction whatsoever.
No, that's the thing.
I mean, there's no actual scenes happening. There's just it's just sort of these vignettes, these almost stories that are being told. You can kind of maybe piece together what happened once you get all the clues and once you talk to the characters, like, oh, clearly the writer did this one. I think if they were going to do this, what I would have done, first off, let's talk about how we would maybe improve this game. I think that would be really interesting. We're not mm-hmm. necessarily game designers, but having been exposed to this, like, what things we were frustrated about. The AI is kind of off the table at this point. We've talked about how that doesn't really work for any sort of narrative or satisfying mystery. However, logistically, the game, the first thing that I hate the most about this game is the timer.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, like, there's no
there's a timer running there's for just no reason.
No reason for it. What ends up happening is that I just randomly guess and then I have to go back in and find all the clues again, or don't find all the clues, and just kind of guess at what we were talking about, and try to figure out, try to reinitiate these conversations from scratch, or just like move on and do another case and then just start being very irreverent towards these idiots. In this otherwise nice looking mansion with a hedge maze out back.
Yeah, which is I never found anything in.
Really?
I guess maybe I didn't do cases with anything in the maze, but
The first case I think usually had one clue in the maze, and then there was also a ghost.
I saw the ghost. Yeah,
that would lead you into the maze, and then you could see the thing. But like, that was whatever.
I know how I would fix this game. Actually,
how would you fix this game?
I would just make it into Velvet Sundown.
Okay.
Do you know what Velvet Sundown is?
No.
Velvet Sundown is a social multiplayer game from 2014 that reminded me, I got a lot of vibes off of this. It's a similar idea in which you're wandering around talking to people and getting text-to-speech responses back, and like you're like investigating things and like, you know, like finding clues and stuff like that. But the thing is, it's a multiplayer game. They're all other people and everyone has to interact through the text-to-speech interface and try and play their characters.
Interesting.
This would be great if it was like other human beings on the other side.
I don't know. That seems like a lot of work. I feel like I just want more time to be able to
spend in the world. Sure.
Actually try and problem solve and crack at this, the AI generated. Like, I want the game to let me have the space I need to breathe and think about the things I'm saying, because the English language is very large, and if the entirety of it is at my disposal when talking to these characters to try and figure out the mystery, I would like that to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But usually what ends up happening is that you get kind of a vague idea of who did it, and then just on a hunch.
The one that I solved, I was just like, oh, it's the scriptwriter, and then I put him in, and it was like,
yep.
You did it.
Oh, yeah, there's nothing. It's either you did it or the house is on fire. that's probably gonna do it for my thoughts on Quiet on Set. Do you have anything else you want to say?
At one point I asked Skylar, how do you feel about pomegranate juice?
Okay.
And Skylar said, pomegranate juice is like a burst of artistic inspiration to me. Its rich, vibrant color reminds me of the dramatic hues we often use in film, and its tangy taste is akin to the unexpected twists in a well-crafted storyline. However, just like any flavor, it may not appeal to everyone, but that's the beauty of individual preferences.
That's fantastic. There's a dead body in the next room, Skylar. Skylar, that was he was alive an hour ago.
It's so funny. Again, also, in none of the cases that I tried, did anyone seem to care about the fact that someone
literally nobody cared.
I was just like,
we're just going to keep producing this movie.
It's an HR nightmare.
Like, imagine if the production of Rust kept going after Alec Baldwin shot that lady.
Oh, the other one I did also was one time I just tried deliberately.
Is that why this game exists?
Maybe.
Oh my god, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I'm like, wait, what if they just kept going? Sorry, go ahead.
One time also I did deliberately use the wrong name for the murder victim, and the bot just totally acted like I was like talking about the right person.
Yes.
And then when I was like, no, aren't you mistaken? Isn't the murder victim actually this name? And they were like, my apologies, you're correct. And it's like, it's just doing the ChatGPT thing.
Yeah.
Where anytime it gets something wrong, it's just like, oh, you were right.
Yeah, it doesn't have any, it does everything it can to avoid conflict. Which does not make for good storytelling.
Yeah, that too. I'm honestly curious how they managed to get like the facts that they did to stick to the to the fake brains of these things, because I don't know, seems difficult to steer.
Yeah, an admirable game, a good effort with that could really use some changes. And once it gets those changes, it'll be a lot more friendly to streamers to just fuck around with and enjoy the ridiculousness of AI with chat.
I would build like a second or a third mansion also. Like, you can use the same assets, but
you
just
could,
like...
You could change the map
like
up a little bit. 11
cases in this 9-room mansion.
You could also just switch up who the murderer is.
Oh, like, yeah.
at any given time, it's just like... It could be any one of these fuckers for any reason. So long as you have the correct ability to put cracks in the facade of these robots, if you like intentionally do that, then that would make it, you could just do anything. Like you could actually replay these cases over and over again to get different moments and different things. And that would give this game the longevity that it would really need to succeed. But that'll be it for our thoughts on Quiet Onset. I am going to go paint a masterpiece, and then we're going to have a nice ad break, and when we get back, we're going to start our month-long chat about Secret of Evermore.
Yes, we are.
Shh.
Do you have, like, oils or acrylic? What are you working with?
Shh.
Watercolor?
Shh.
Human blood?
We're going to read some ads.
Jerome, are you getting good sleep at night?
Absolutely not.
Does your back, you wake up and your back is just in pain every time?
Oh God, not another one of these.
Could that be because your mattress is shaped like a flat piece of paper, which is not how the human body is shaped? I want you to do something for me. I want you to hold out your hand like this, okay?
Okay.
What shape does your hand naturally kind of like curl around?
Well, I'm super gay, so it does actually just go straight down.
Okay, but kind of like you're holding a basketball, right?
Nope.
And I think about like your eyeballs. Like your eyeballs are like spheres. Like the human body is full of spheres.
Okay,
it's got like eyeballs, and like your hand wants to curl around a sphere, and like the spine is designed to like to curve as if it was lying on a ball. See, we have wasted centuries on making these flat rectangular mattresses when what you really need is a sphere-tress.
Okay,
sphere-tress is an 8-foot-wide solid mattress. The 8-foot-wide solid spherical mattress that you roll into your bedroom and then climb on top of every night. It's been designed by Dr. Marvis Fletch, who has a PhD in chiropractic, and he is here to bring it to
you. No, he doesn't. No, he doesn't. Stop.
All the
Don't
secrets
say that.
Of better sleep that the government is trying to deny from you.
I hate this. I hate this so much. What's to stop you from rolling off? I'll bite.
So you get these large straps, and you strap your hands in on one end, and you strap your legs in on the other, and then you sleep like that, and in the morning, you try to unfasten the Velcro, which I've had mixed success on, but, you know, when it works, it's been extremely comfortable.
What happens when you need to, like, get new sheets for it?
So you can get them from the same company that makes those giant parachutes that they sell to elementary schools.
Oh, okay. That paints a picture. Paints a really, really vivid picture. Like how, if I were to put a glass of wine on the top of that sphere, and I were to jump somewhere else on that sphere.
Somewhere else on the sphere.
How resilient would that glass of wine be?
Oh, it would go immediately careening off and crash into the wall at high speed.
Okay.
It's not a bed for doing anything else other than sleeping.
Okay. Wow.
But like, what else do you want to do in your bed besides sleep, honestly?
I do like to crochet. Once in a while. It's gonna be difficult when my arms are strapped down.
Yeah, the angles are gonna be tricky, but you know.
Gonna be tricky. I do also like to like to recite poetry.
That should be fine.
That should be fine. Okay, great, 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 great. I do also like to trade in the black market. Particularly like arm stealing. I think that's like really profitable right now.
Like arm stealing.
Yeah,
from your mattress.
From my mattress. It's like the place to be.
Like via an app or.
It's usually like one or two apps. But then, like, this is the centralized place where I, like, have my shop set up.
I mean, you'll be able to hold your phone in your hand, but the curvature of the mattress means you won't be able to see it very well. So, like, that's doable but tricky.
Because, like, I put, like, basically, like, how good is it at hiding guns?
Oh, how is it good at hiding guns?
Yeah, like, if I have to put things under it.
It's got, like, you know, a 2-foot-wide cavity in the middle, like, you know, reinforced with solid steel.
Oh, okay.
Chicken wire. So, you know, you could, like, put, like, handguns in there, probably not like an assault rifle.
Okay, okay. Interesting. So, all right, I think that's enough questions about the Sphere-tris, mm-hmm. right?
It's available now for 8 small payments of $139.99. Which honestly, for like an 8-foot diameter mattress, is a steal.
It's kind of like the opposite of my current mattress, which does has a big divot in it.
Yeah, exactly, right? And like, and how do you feel on that? Because like, your body doesn't want to sleep in a concave.
Well, it's
shape.
Useful for my huge ass.
Wants to sleep. Okay, well, that will be a bit of a problem. That will force your hips up the mattress in a way that I'm not actually sure
of my own
how good it is for your spinal health.
I mean, I thought you said it was good for us to sleep on spheres because we have spheres in our bodies, like with my huge ass. That's two.
But the spheres aren't meant to meet.
Huge meat globules. Speaking of meat.
Maybe you're better off the regular mattress, but everyone else should buy a Sphere-tris. Okay.
All right. Everyone else with their flat asses.
Exactly.
If you have a flat ass, buy the Sphere-tris.
Mm-hmm. That's the tagline.
But if you're packing booty like me, you need that sweet, sweet L mattress, baby.
Yeah, that's the one that lets your ass act as a natural cushion.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Is there a promo code for this fucking dumpster ass mattress?
Yeah. Stormbuds will get you it doesn't even have a discount on here. It just says put in promo code Stormbuds at checkout, but there's no associated like benefit. It might just be UTM tracking.
There's also not any storefront. I don't know. Try Amazon.
It's not on Amazon. You can't get them on eBay.
Okay.
Sphere-tris from Marvis Fletch.
Oh, chiropractors aren't doctors. Got it. Also,
a PhD is not the degree you get.
It sure isn't. I'm well aware of that. That's what's upsetting.
Sorry. Have you seen the Cube pillow ads?
Yes. Of course I have. God damn it.
What?
I spent all this time painting. I had this vision, right?
Uh-huh.
You know, I have a pretty high up balcony. I look above a body of water.
Incredible view.
Sometimes there are clouds that are pretty low on that water. So I was like, why don't I paint this? And I'm not the best painter, right? But I have an idea. I have like really beautiful abstract ideas. So I painted these clouds in like a circular pattern that was kind of repeating. Just like a circle. Big oval ellipsis sort of formation.
Okay.
Along a blue, you know, over a blue body of water. And I called it clouds, a clouds underneath sky, right? Turns the fuck out, some random fucking woman named Georgia O'Keefe.
Oh.
Painted this exact same thing called Sky Above Clouds. Can you believe this bullshit?
Yeah, okay, but who's heard of her?
Literally nobody. So, like, I spent probably 20 minutes painting a bunch of rectangles, rectangular ellipses, clouds, kind of in white, and then realizing I didn't have to because I was doing it on printer paper. And then I put blue over the sea and then put a little pink on top. All that effort's wasted now. This is bullshit.
I will say you did quite well for oil on printer paper. Like, that's a tough medium.
Yeah, that is. That's just what we have here at Stormbud's budget. Maybe when we get a Patreon, I could finally upgrade to, like, I don't know, a dish rag.
Or like get like a hard surface that you can work on so you're not just holding the paper over your knee.
Yeah, it's either the knee or the carpet. But anyway, we have a game to talk about. We are going to be pivoting into a new month-long discussion. Last month, we talked about Final Fantasy XIV Dawn Trail. And you would think, given our name and podcast image, that we would continue talking about that game. But we're not going to.
No.
In fact, we are probably going to change both of those things at some point in the future.
I'm good on Final Fantasy XIV for a hot second.
I'm good on it for a very hot second. But we've got some ideas in the woodworks. I'm just not going to announce anything yet, but keep an eye out over the coming months for just maybe a couple of branding changes. We're excited. But we are going to talk today about my favorite game ever, my childhood dream game that I loved playing over and over again, Secret of Evermore.
I got to get one of these 1 month also. But okay, anyway.
Oh, of course.
So Secret of Evermore.
Secret of Evermore is a video game published by Squaresoft in the year, what, 1996? Secret of Evermore.
95.
Kind of contemporary with maybe just a little bit before Chrono Trigger, but after Final Fantasy VI, so that in that kind of era. Obviously, it is a reference. It's kind of in the same semi-franchise as Secret of Mana, which is a game Alex and I have played together.
A lot of mechanical similarities.
Developed by an entirely American team that I think didn't end up developing anything else.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Now that you pointed out, I can tell that kind of.
Yeah, exactly. This is a through and through American RPG set at first in a very, you know, real Podunk America town, literally named Podunk, which was a reference that was new to me at the time.
Yeah, I booted this up and I was like, wait, this is like in the U.S. in 1965? What?
This game and Earthbound are kind of the only two, like the progenitors of having that kind of setting, though Earthbound takes it in a wildly different direction. Secret of Evermore, while it is it's a lot of similarities to Secret of Mana, it has a lot of differences, most of which I think I make it favor comparably well to the game Secret of Mana. Granted, I played Mana afterwards, so maybe I have rose-tinted glasses. But I want to hear your first thoughts about it. We played through, just for everyone's context, we played through the first quarter of this game. This game is divided into very clear chapters, and there are kind of four of them, and we will talk about them over the month. So tell me more about your thoughts and be as open and critical as possibly can, because Lord knows I'm going to be.
I mean, I'll say this. I was having a bad time for about the first three, four hours of this game.
Really?
I think just like, by the time I got the Spirit of level 2, I think a lot of stuff had clicked for me, but leading up until that point, my experience also improved rapidly at the point where I said, fuck it, I'm just going to save state the hell out of this game.
Oh, yeah.
So
this is an old school RPG, and you're playing it without a manual. Right. So the manual is going to tell you where to do thing, what to do, how, like what certain setups, what certain things are going to mean in the menus and how you're going to actually manipulate the various systems in this game, like the alchemy and the AI of the dog and the charging of the weapons and the things like that. If you even haven't played Secret of Mana, you might not even know that the charging weapons even exist, because this game does not really waste any time explaining anything, which
it doesn't.
I do love. It kind of throws you in, and then this kid who gets sucked into a time portal or a science experiment in the middle of a mansion, and his dog and his ever-changing dog are sucked into this portal, and they have to find their way back home to Podunk. That's basically the game, and the characters in this game are so direct and irreverent in a way that is almost reminiscent of like a Paper Mario game proto.
Yeah, it's a lot of comedy in here. A lot of comedy that works. Like little moments like when you get flung up under the top of the volcano and you fly through the air.
Mm-hmm.
Like slapstick even in like a 16-bit pixel RPG.
Yes, and one of the things that favors that works well in this game is the lack of a third character. For mm-hmm. me, I really enjoy, like, when we played it together, it was fine because we only had the one AI that was like, God, stop the sprite, stop being stupid. But in this game, while you can't do co-op, which is sad because budget cuts, you only get one dog and you can control the dog's AI pretty well. You can either set it to search or fight. I mostly set it to only fight because gosh dang it, it's going to search anyway. And what does search mean? Well, this is the best thing about this game. The dog will sniff out items on the ground for you, and it will do so at any given moment.
It's great.
It is fantastic. It has a wonderfully designed sniffing sound that you will hear lots, but it feels so organic for 1995. The sound and music of this game is
incredible.
If you're familiar with this composer, created by Jeremy Soule, who did work for the Harry Potter franchise of games, the pre-Hogwarts Legacy stuff, maybe even Hogwarts Legacy, I don't know, as well as Elder Scrolls, all of those games. So he is responsible for the Dragonborn and the everything, you know, all those songs you've heard. But this is a far cry from that. This game has a extremely beautifully kind of almost Aphex Twin like ambient soundscape soundtrack with a couple of bangers, particularly Fire Eyes is a character who is the leader of the prehistoric nation because she dreamed it up and she's just said this is Evermore, and you basically said this is Evermore. I dreamed up this world, and you know I love a dream world.
Oh yeah.
So as soon as I heard that, I was like, yes.
Interesting stuff happening there as well. I wasn't sure what to make of this game until we got to the little girl who runs the village, who's from our time.
Yeah, and I was like, I'm from Podunk, I'll help.
What's your deal? You're like a 10-year-old. Like she's like, have you seen the movie Men in Black? Like
a long time ago. Yeah.
There's a scene where Will Smith's character is like he's brought in to like interview for the Men in Black, and they take him to like the shooting range, and he like all the other guys start blasting away at all these cutouts of aliens or whatever, but he only lands one shot in the forehead of this little girl with pigtails holding an advanced physics book. Yeah. And it's just this girl.
Yeah, like, she is, and she also. She sets us on our way for our mission here to try and maybe solve a greater problem. But basically, she also teaches us our first alchemy spell. And alchemy is the other best thing about this game. It's a system that is like the magic system from Secret of Mana, where you have your rotating menu and you select a system of spells. But it doesn't have the fucking like submenu of the eight elements that you go to.
Yeah, uh-huh.
It's just, you just have a menu of spells that you choose from. And then eventually, as your alchemy spell list grows and grows, you have to actually get a loadout and try and optimize and make choices for what you're going to do. And this, it rules. I love the alchemy system. I wish to make another game with an alchemy system like this. I wish, or like to have another game like this. There's all sorts of, you know, tributes to JRPGs and other RPGs of the past that indie devs make. I hopefully somebody makes one for this game, because the alchemy system alone is super cool.
So, two reasons why I was having a bad time with this game early on.
Yeah.
First,
tell me about
that. Pure combat, you start weak as shit. And that's the
It's
like you do almost no damage. You get knocked back constantly. It's very. And there's one thing I'm still going to vent about, even as far as I've gotten, which is like, I feel like it should not be possible for attacks to have a random miss probability.
Oh, it's super frustrating.
In a game where I'm already missing half of my attacks because I haven't lined up the pixels exactly perfectly.
You know what doesn't miss? Alchemy.
Yeah,
Alchemy does not miss. And it does have every... It's one of those games, kind of like Final Fantasy II original, where like you level up each individual weapon and each individual spell with how much you use it. You're not leveling up your HP or any other stats, though. You just have a general level up system. And this game does get beat with grinding. Basically.
Yep. Yeah, well, and that was the thing also. Good,
but it's fun grinding. It's fun to grind in this game because, one, you're not listening to, like, in the year 2024, it's fun to listen do this because you're not listening to an annoying or, like, a really bombastic, overblown chiptune of an overworld that's, like, cut drastically into a battle music. You're just listening to soothing abstract sounds of a jungle while you hit crab skeletons for EXP.
Those fucking flowers.
And it's like, and the flowers that eat you.
So annoying.
But like, that's it's good. It's really it's compelling, and these monsters are threatening and interesting, even if they are kind of reskins of each other after a while.
Right. I mean, because the other thing I was having trouble with early on was that early on it was very difficult to have enough ingredients on hand to have more than like an inventory of like 4 to 6 of any given spell, which meant that I was really hoarding it and really using it very infrequently.
Yeah, that's not the way.
Once I've beaten a few bosses and I've got a few thousand, like, you know, currency under my belt or whatever, now I can be like, okay, I've got ingredients for like to cast flare or whatever. Yeah, 50 times.
The best thing I can recommend to you is to invest in ingredients over gear.
Yes.
Because then you level up your spells, and then you're able to, I mean, then that fuel, like, because money's infinite. Every time you kill something, you get a little bit of money. So it's just a matter of time. The first dungeon of this game, the Bugmuck, is kind of a prelude of things to come, sort of, in that this game like is very much there's two things going on in this game. One, it is all mazes.
Yep.
Every dungeon is a maze.
Which
I love.
They're good mazes, actually.
I played this game like 14, 15 times, and I still forget everywhere I go. So I'm like, God, these are good mazes.
No, like, I am normally not a maze person in games. I think that mazes are like a really sort of like kind of a cheap way to pad out time. But these work pretty well for me. I think like they're pretty well designed. They have mm-hmm. interesting things going on. Like, they do a lot with sort of like what you can see on the screen in terms of having upper paths and lower paths that are accessible from different locations and stuff like that.
Yes, absolutely. It plays with layers really well, the mazes. And another thing that these dungeons do is that oftentimes there will be a way back that does not involve backtracking.
Yeah, that's great.
Huge
too.
For 1995. Very, like, so there's Dark Souls is pulling a lot from Secret of Mana in this game, like in the secret games, mm-hmm. right? Where you're venturing further from a safe spot in town and then coming back with currency and spending it and venturing out further and further until eventually you get to kind of a checkpoint or like a boss and then a secret way back that you have observed before. In the instance of the Bugmuck, you're able to go back atop the cliffs. And did you get the acid rain formula?
I did not get the acid rain formula. No.
There's a couple of things you got to watch out for when you're playing this game. Okay. One is like clips on the side. If there's like a little bit of light on the side mm-hmm. of anything, you can probably walk through a wall.
Okay.
Because it's a SNES RPG. They're playing with perspective like that, Tunic style. So you probably walk through a wall at some point. I totally lost my train of thought. I think I already told you to set your dog, or like I set my dog to just
to
fight.
Sniff. Yeah.
To fight, not to sniff, because he does a shit ton of damage. The dog chomps and the dog rules. Love my dog. I named him Biggs, even though that's my cat name.
I named my dog Gromit.
Gromit, okay. Like, let this game be fun and silly and stupid. And it's such a breath of fresh air compared to, sorry, just because we just talked about Final Fantasy XIV. I'm going to bring it up. But compared to a game like that, where like it's so entrenched in its own universe at this point, to no fault of its own, it kind of has to constantly keep everything in check and explaining it and like thinking of everything in advance. But this game's just like, when you get your alchemy spell, Fire Eye says is, I'm going to teach you an alchemy spell. It's flash. Use it to hurt monsters in a pinch. And then your character is like, sweet, that sounds great. Like, it knows that you know what alchemy kind of refers to, and it lets you do that. And there's a couple of funny things I want to point out about this game as well that I think are worth talking about before we kind of wrap up. Well, we have time to actually talk some more. That are very funny to me, just kind of quirks of this game. One is that when you save at an inn, the innkeeper will 9 times out of 10 just stand over you.
Yeah, they do.
Like, all right, have a good rest. Boy. Okay, great. Two is that people will start trauma dumping on you and then immediately ask you if you want to purchase ingredients. It's funny every time. Oh, my brother Strongheart is in danger. He went into the Bugmuck and he hasn't been back for weeks, and I'm terrified. I can't get any sleep. Would you like to purchase ingredients?
Yes, I'll take 30 crystals, please.
Oh my god, sweet talons. So how far actually did you make it? We were trying to get to the volcano.
I played like 10 minutes after I beat the volcano boss into the next area.
Okay, so yeah. Exactly same. Like I just went up to because where I knew the inn was and saved mm-hmm. and like stopped. And the game, it's the swamp is what I want to talk about the most, because the swamp is hard.
The swamp
it's
is
not
hard.
Easy.
Fucking frogs, man.
The frogs are highly evasive. They have really quick attacks. So it's tricky to get through them.
So like that was really where I started to get pissed off at the mischance thing. It was like, I'll lunge forward with my spear. The attack will miss. The frog will counterattack and knock me backwards. I'm just like, bullshit.
It's a little frustrating. Yeah, the flat evasion chance. So that's not like Dark Souls where everything that hits, but you're still slowly venturing deeper and deeper into the swamp and going back with your tools and restocking, leveling up your spells and your character and progressing that way in a much more organic way compared to a Final Fantasy of yore that maybe we will get around to as well. We'll see. We'll get a better context of it. So this game is less, it's a very linear game, but at the progression, the act of progression does have loops in it.
You go back to places, right? Yeah. Like a lot of, like I found myself sometimes with the help of looking stuff up, sometimes with just sort of like, you know, figuring it out by myself, being like, okay, I know like next I need to go into this area,
right?
But I am going to go back to like, this previous
area.
You
might
and
not
like,
have know that there's like a puzzle for the levitate formula that you have to get at the top of the volcano. You like might miss that thing. Like there's a, and this game does suffer from missables.
I did find that speed formula, which I'm glad.
Oh, speed formula. Nice. But there's going to be plenty of stuff that's not missable that will get you through it difficulty-wise.
Am I just screwed on Acid Rain now?
No, not Acid Rain.
Oh, okay. Phew. Okay. I want that.
But there are other ones that are... You would have been screwed on speed had you missed it. So that's a good one to get. But like, I still miss them sometimes if I'm not looking them up, which I don't often because I just want to enjoy the game. But like last time I missed a formula in Zone 2, in the second zone, in the desert zone. The rest of this month is going to be talking about kind of zone by zone this game, and I'm gonna start to we're talking less about what the story actually is and more about what we're feeling about this game.
I do have one question, yeah, which is like, what's up with that girl's evil twin who shows up?
That is true. The mystery that we're left off with at the end of the volcano, there is a natural disaster, seemingly natural disaster happening where the volcano is cooling down and the prehistoric region is in danger of going into an ice age. And there, it turns out there's an agent behind this who is an evil twin of Fire Eyes.
Who's built a giant boiler.
Giant boiler to control the temperature. And we have to fight a rock person that jumps back and forth, healing in the lava. before it explodes and we get sent off across the river, land into a coconut, fall out of a coconut tree, land into a coconut shell, and then fall down a waterfall.
All completely free of context.
Completely free of context.
Which I will say also, like, I have not found any of the boss fights in this too bad.
Like, no. They're like, I think Thrax,
they take
the bug box,
yeah,
was kind of fun. At first, like, it's scary because... Like, they'll often summon ads that are constantly replenishing, but, like, I don't know. I like that. I want to talk about... Yeah, I want to talk more about the swamp. I forgot. Okay. I forgot to... Because, I have a story about this fucking
swamp. Oh, yeah.
Swamp.
Story time.
So, first off, like, this boss is foreshadowed in the opening of the game when the kid... When the boy is talking about the movie he just came out of, and the boy is constantly making B-movie references with everyone, and they're all like, okay, kid, whatever you say... They're very dismissive of his B movie references. They just want him to do. They just want him to save the world. But what he says right out of Podunk Theater, he says, "Man, my favorite part was the battle with the toxic swamp monster. You could barely tell it was a bunch of tires and a garden hose."
Oh right. Okay.
And this monster now shows up and looks basically like a bunch of tires and a garden hose. But it was so fucking hard for me as a child. Again, I was 6 when this came out, right? This was my millennia.
Oh, yeah?
The Salabog fight was my fucking millennia. I probably spent like 20 tries trying to beat it. When eventually one day I accidentally charged my spear a little bit, and I was like, what was that?
Oh, you didn't have the charge? Yeah,
I didn't know I had it.
I had my spirit level 3 at that point, so it went down pretty quick.
Yeah. No, I'm not trying to level up that hard. I'm trying to, like, really just try to... But no, when I was a kid, that wasn't communicated clearly to me. But eventually I figured out that I did have a ranged attack and that I could use it. And this thing still has a lot of HP.
Yeah.
Like, for what it is. Like, and... But I was always so woefully unprepared, and I was the only other like video game I had played was like Final Fantasy, like RPG I'd played was maybe like Final Fantasy Mystic Quest, and maybe like the intro to Final Fantasy V. Man, no, that wasn't out in the US. It must have been 4, which was 2 at the time. And then I was like, I don't get it, because that was harder. Anyway, so I eventually beat this fucking thing after tries, and the entire house that I lived up was just filled with me screaming full of joy. I'd be like, yes, yes. And I jumped up and down across the sofa, and my mom got mad at me, but I was like, whatever, this is the greatest day of my life.
That's really sweet. That's
and
cute.
My brother was there and he started making fun of me. I was like, really? But I was 6. I didn't have that many days of my life yet. That was up there, but I'll never forget beating that boss, beating that fucking stupid tires and a garden hose boss. Yeah, and then the narrative. I want to say the story of this game isn't very complex, right? At the start,
not a lot of text. Very kind of like broad strokes. A lot of like big emotions. Yeah,
yeah, but it does an effective job of keeping me compelled by way of not having just like a random MacGuffin, or like you solve one problem and then there's the next problem. Like there's a greater mystery that's happening here, and we are slowly progressing towards a goal of getting back home while we happen to be helping these people out, or just trying to engage in mutual aid and relationships with these characters. So I think it does a really good job of that, as opposed to Secret of Mana, where you're just kind of like, I mean, yeah, there's a greater task of like this Sword of Mana, and then there's like an empire threat, and you have to go through.
I could not tell you any of the story of Secret of Mana.
Eight different temples that are all just fire temple, ice temple, whatever temple. Like
I enjoyed playing Secret of Mana with you, but that game was so long.
It was so long and rough, and not like. Yeah, this game doesn't not. This game is basically, it's also tropey like Secret of Mana in a different way, but it is a lot more varied in its dungeon and character design that in a way that I think is a lot more fun and refreshing and nice. And the music, fucking the music in Secret of Mana, I'm not gonna slog it. It is a lot. It's very. Whereas this game is just like. Unless Fire Eyes is on screen, then it's like, yeah.
Wow, you captured it perfectly. That's exactly what it sounds like.
I fucking love it. Jeremy Stoll knocked it out of the park. He was like 17, and he just was like, "Hey, Squaresoft, I will write video game music here. I know how to do it." And there are three people in this country that know how to write a video game music for a SNES, because it's like a specific weird program that you have to learn. And they're like, okay, this was the 90s. You could just do that and get a job. Isn't that, maybe that's why our parents always yelling at us to get a job, because you could just ask for it and they would give it to you back in the day.
Yeah,
isn't
I know, that weird? Right?
That's going to do it for our discussion on part one of Secret of Evermore. I hope you guys are playing along with us. If you're not, that's cool. But like, this game is ostensibly free. I need to. There's a cart of this in a local game shop that I kind of want to pick up, even though
just
I don't
like
have
to have it.
Just to have it. Maybe I will. But we will continue our discussion next week alongside our discussion of It's Not Nancy Drew, which we do have the poll for.
It's Whispered World's up.
It's Whispered World. Yeah, we're going to talk about the Whispered World. Maybe two if Whispered World 1 is really short. But yes, that will be our continuation of ASMR. August.
This theme is so coherent.
I love this theme. I'm having a lot of fun with it. I want to also announce the winner of the poll for Nancy Drew. We had our four options in our Discord. You can join with the link in the description of the episode. The choices were Nancy Drew, the Silent Spy, The Legend of the Crystal, The Final Scene, The Haunting of Castle Malloy. And the winner is The Silent Spy.
Yep, that's what people went with.
That's what people went with. But there was interest in other Nancy Drew games. Maybe. If we really like this one, we'll come back and talk about another Nancy Drew game. Maybe this will be a Nancy Drew podcast.
I think it'll be... you know, maybe. There's a lot of those games. I'm just saying.
Oh, man. But I think that's going to do it for housekeeping. Join us next week as we talk about the Whispered World and more Secret of Evermore as a part of ASMR August. This has been another exciting episode, or a relaxing episode, of Stormbuds, and I have been your host of light, Jerome Barbatsis, and I was joined by my co-host of light, Alexander Hambrock. Say good night.
Good night.
Sleep tight.
I was going to do something like, don't let the bed bugs that you now feel crawling over your skin bite.
Don't. They're tickling your arms.
Can't you feel it running up and down your skin?
I am a bed bug. And
I can't even joke about that. I had bed bugs. It was the most awful thing in the world.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, it's okay.